Fließen.
My dad has come from Flex in Dubai. And basically, I was interested in both presentations, and there was a lot that has been said about the meaning of open education. And I think that one of the problems and the dilemmas that we have is that we speak a lot about how much ICT can bring into higher education in specific, and you know, looking at the pedagogical framework for integrating ICT and so forth. But there is, I believe, an issue at the policy level, at country level. I mean, it's amazing to have all these platforms and these forums where we come and talk about ICT. But if at the policy level we're still having issues with recognizing this form of education as a viable quality way of learning, we haven't done anything. Our colleague from France spoke about the model where basically you get, you know, you have a system and you actually assess the student's current skills and competencies, look at gaps, and then identify a roadmap for their development. Now, technically, in our educational system, this is not possible because there are entry requirements that are mandated by commissions of accreditations, by ministries of higher education, on what should be the minimum level of students to be admitted into the higher educational system. We don't recognize vocational learning as a way of giving credit towards an academic qualification in most of the Arab countries. So there's still this issue and this dilemma at the policy level on actually how do we change the mindset, how do we get a better recognition? Because as you mentioned, yes, an effort at an institutional level is important. You know, you cannot start with the faculty trying to do something and not getting the support, but it's the same thing at an institutional level. I've seen institutions investing heavily on technology, on platforms, on developing faculty competencies and skills in e-learning, in technology-enhanced education, and then it didn't go anywhere because the ministry said we're not going to recognize this form of education. So I think that that's something that probably we should look into as maybe the starting point.
Yes. I would have a question that is also linked to primary secondary education, because to prepare students for higher education, we need to also think what happens in the lower levels, if they can fall lower in the preparatory level, so to say. And recently, OECD published a study about the impact of ICTs on results of learning. And actually, the main conclusion is that there is no significant evidence that ICT-driven learning brought about better results. And this goes for primary, secondary. So if you could maybe tell us more about what kind of benefits in terms of learning results could be expected, especially in higher education. So what, because you talked about connected learning and the benefits, but if we could elaborate a little bit more so that we can also think in terms of, okay, if these are the results, then what do we need to do for them?
D'abord, vous avez dans vos universités la génération Internet maintenant. Donc, ce serait quand même curieux de proposer des formules d'enseignement qui ne tiennent pas compte, je dirais, de la société dans laquelle vivent ces étudiants. Ils ont tous leur smartphone, ils ont tous un certain nombre d'applications qu'ils utilisent. Donc, pourquoi, du côté enseignement, on n'utiliserait pas ce genre de choses? C'est un décalage, je dirais, assez important qu'il y aurait si ça n'était pas le cas. Ça, c'est la première chose. Type de bénéfice qu'on peut avoir, c'est évidemment, je l'ai dit un peu tout à l'heure, c'est augmenter le taux de réussite. Augmenter le taux de réussite des étudiants, si ça ne marche pas de manière traditionnelle, si on a un taux qui est toujours à peu près le même, ça veut dire qu'il va falloir peut-être changer la pédagogie et essayer d'essayer autre chose pour améliorer. Alors les expériences qui ont été menées, que j'ai menées moi-même aussi d'ailleurs, montre qu'effectivement, on a un taux de réussite meilleur. Meilleur. Et ça, c'est pas sur une semaine ou un mois, c'est sur plusieurs années. On a pu constater qu'effectivement, on avait une amélioration de ce genre de choses. Et puis, il y a des choses qui sont indirectes et qu'on ne voit pas, c'est qu'on rend l'étudiant acteur de sa propre formation. Parce que quand il est à distance, dans les sessions où il est à distance, il a une liste de choses à faire. Donc il est responsabilisé, il doit faire, il sait que ça sera vérifié, parce que sur la plateforme qu'on utilise, on aura les traces de ce qu'il aura fait. Donc ça, c'est très important, effectivement, de le responsabiliser. Il est aussi acteur, par le fait qu'il peut poser des questions. Il peut animer lui-même aussi un débat, ça peut être intéressant, effectivement, de ce point de vue-là. Et, en fin de compte, il va créer une certaine autonomie. L'autonomie, c'est extrêmement important et c'est extrêmement utile dans l'enseignement à distance. Il faut être autonome. Il ne faut pas attendre qu'on dise tous les 5 minutes ce qu'il y a à faire. Et donc, c'est important, effectivement, de rendre le plus autonome possible l'étudiant. Et en fait, qu'est-ce que c'est la mission de l'université ? On réfléchit un petit peu. Je crois que c'est apprendre à apprendre. Apprendre à apprendre, c'est-à-dire faire en sorte que l'étudiant par lui-même ait le réflexe d'aller rechercher de l'information, aller rechercher des cours ailleurs. Et vous parlez de bibliographie ou de sites à visiter, je pense que c'est très important effectivement de pouvoir signaler ce genre de choses et de vérifier peut-être que l'étudiant y va, ça donnera une idée sur effectivement le comportement des étudiants. Il y a pas mal de bénéfices dans ce cas-là. J'y ajouterai l'attractivité. C'est évident que quand on a des ressources en ligne qui sont bien faites, qui sont de qualité, les MOOC sont un bon exemple de qualité de point de vue-là, parce que c'est bien fait, c'est bien scénarisé, et si tous les cours universitaires étaient comme les MOOC, même en présence, bon, ça serait pas mal aussi. Je pense que là, il y a un effet intéressant. Et si vous avez une université qui propose effectivement des formules à distance avec des contenus de qualité, vous aurez beaucoup plus de gens qui viendront s'inscrire chez vous. Ça paraît une évidence totale.
Merci. Monsieur Doris.
Okay. I'd like to address both remarks. First of all, I'm familiar with the study that you've cited. And one of the criticisms of that study was that it did not distinguish between different types of use of ICT in education. So it could have been anything. It also did not assess whether the teacher or the instructor was trained in or had experience using the technology. So we always have to be careful about taking the results of a study like that and interpreting it. And this field, sadly, is full of stuff like that. It's a good question, though, to ask what it is that bringing ICT into the conversation adds to learning. And if I can refer back to what I presented, we progress from a simple understanding to perhaps a constructive understanding to an actual connected, embodied understanding. And let me explain what that means. Think of what it is to be a physicist, a person, a scientist who does research in physics. You could just look at another scientist and copy everything they did. And that would be a certain level of knowledge. But it would not be very deep knowledge, and we would not really consider it to be satisfactory. We could take the understandings of a physicist, all the facts that they know, the principles that they know, even their skills, right? How do you set up a physics experiment? How do you roll the ball down? And we could test a person for that and say, yes, this person has all the knowledge and skills that a physicist has. And that's the sort of result that we get from a traditional education where a person is in class and being taught the model that you described. Interaction in a community of practice, or in this case, a community of physicists, takes us a step beyond that. And this interaction may happen online, it may happen offline, but what we've found is that the use of information and communication technology makes much more interaction possible than previously. It used to be the case that if you wanted to work with a real physicist, you had to go to MIT and study with one. But now, you can interact with them online. And the sort of knowledge that you get is how to be a physicist. And that's a different kind of knowledge. Now, what does that mean? It, you know, like express it as, you know, knowing what questions to ask, knowing what counts as a question, knowing what counts as evidence, having a way of looking at the world, having a feel for the data. Wittgenstein called it a way of life. Thomas Kuhn called it knowing how to answer the questions at the end of the chapter. So there's a difference between simply knowing everything that a physicist knows and actually being a physicist. And we recognize that that's really important. And in disciplines that really matter, we always have this third step. Doctors, for example. We would never simply give a doctor a test and then have them go treat patients. Never. We would make sure that the doctor practiced in a hospital as an intern. And an experienced doctor would watch that performance as a whole and recognize, yes, this person is a doctor. Airline pilot, right? We would never send a person into a commercial airliner on the basis of tests alone. That would be crazy. We make sure they practice in the simulator. We make sure that they have a certain number of hours of actual flight experience. Then, and only then, can they actually take on a passenger. So that's the improvement in knowledge. It's not knowing more facts. It's not getting better test scores. It's being more integrated into the community and becoming more of a physicist. And this leads us to the question of recognition and evaluation. And my short response is, when we have information and communications technologies connecting everybody together, communities form online. And we actually have now, worldwide, you know, the community of physicists, the community of philosophers, the community of beekeepers. There actually is one. I checked.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a member.
You're a member, okay. And in those communities, for the most part, certification isn't required. Now, to get a job, certification is required, but to be recognized, that's different from the certification. And we are going to find over time, as we become more and more connected and more able to see what each other does, it'll become less and less important from a practical perspective to have a degree or a discipline. A degree or a diploma. Computer science is a really good example right now. Look what happens in computer science. A person takes part in a community, say an open source software project. They contribute first at the edges, at the periphery, but over time they become more and more central to the project. Their expertise is recognized by the other members of the community by their ability to actually see what they're doing. To get a job with Google, you don't have to have a computer science degree, you just have to be an expert programmer.
This is it. Thank you.
I'd like to add something concerning regulation and evaluation that one has asked. In my position, I have been in contact with many ministers since 2000. You know, the problem, it's not the problem of really, as we say, ministerial policies. First of all, in the Arab country, there is a kind of opposition from the universities. You must see this. There is a kind of classical, what we say, you know, habits in the universities. They don't try to go in with the new technology, integrate ICTs, etc. First, secondly, we are afraid. I'm in a position of responsibility in the ministry. We are afraid because when we see that somewhere in the world there is a problem of financing of higher education, and many universities try, even good universities, try to use, unfortunately, this kind of education as a kind of income to their universities. And frankly, from UK, we see now many degrees, you know very well, in Dubai, the universities that deliver online degrees, we don't understand how they deliver it. And even the most important thing for us, we didn't see till now pedagogy. We see technology. None of the universities propose really the pedagogic aspect. Another thing, when you talk about accreditation bodies in USA, as you know, in USA, first of all, it's the first countries who has, country has developed online. NIASC, for example, Kamal, you know very well. If you exceed 50% of your curricular programs online, you must have a complete strategic plan for this online. They don't accept till now. This means there is a question which is asked not only in our countries, even over the world concerning the online. I believe that it will come, but we need, I'm talking about the ministerial and the political decision makers, we need to be sure. We need to have a kind of, you know, framework that assure us that this kind of education will be well controlled, will have a quality of this education. Till now, as we know in the Arab countries, you know, our quality assurance agencies doesn't work well, no? We know that. Till now, they don't have enough autonomy. Frankly, we look more for, it's a kind of audit more than a real quality assurance process. Then, you know, I think it will come once a day, but till now, we are a little bit, as we say, limited. We don't want to go on. In Iran, we accepted, all the ministers of the Arab world accepted the Arab Open University, as you know. There was a decision by the ministers of Arab. In Iran, we said, well, you need to have a kind of blended learning, and they apply a kind of system of blended learning. A part of education is online, and a part is... Now in Qatar, 2 days ago, they reject all the degrees coming from the Arab Open University. You see, it's not easy. We don't understand how it is applied in the different countries. It seems that in some Arab countries, Arab Open University apply the complete open system. Mm-hmm. This means it's all the program is online. You see, this may create some problems. We need to have a strategy plan at the Arab, at the Arab level. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that the issues are I totally agree with the issues and the challenges you highlighted, and I think that's also the case for traditional institutions, French campuses that are opening up in different countries, and there's the same question about the quality of what these institutions are offering, although they're big names in their countries. But I still think that at the end of the day, the world is moving, and probably as you rightly say, the issue is really looking at maybe a quality framework that will allow us to distinguish the bad from the poor, as opposed as just trying to stop it or just trying to block it. Most of the universities in the UAE in 2007, this Commission of Academic Accreditation released its first standard for online education, and I was the provost of that particular university. The first thing we had was we had to have that physical component. Now that means that the entire strategy of the institution of widening access, reaching out to students from across the Arab world was destroyed, because by the moment you have a physical component, it's one of two. Either you have enough students to have satellite offices and centers in different countries, or you bring them physically on campus. Bringing them physically on campus to Dubai is quite an expensive exercise. So I think that there's a lot of challenges in that, but it's really something that probably ministries of higher education, and I know there's been a lot of talk between different commissions of accreditation, should really look at how to define a way or a framework that will allow us to say that this is good online education and this is poor online education, and therefore we don't look at it, just like with the traditional educational system.
Can I add something, please? Excuse me. I met the director of the QA. There was a meeting for the World Bank in there, not a long time ago, 6 months ago. I asked him, is the broadcasting program that you do in UK is supervised by the QAA for the investment in UK? He said, no. Only your supervisor side. This means we are afraid. We don't want that. You see, this is an aspect. Another aspect that we see, that you talked about very well, and I agree with you, there must be a quality framework, clear quality framework. Even the standards, the European standards concerning the broadcasting, the blended learning, I look for it. It's wonderful. It is not applied. They don't respect it. We talked long time ago of many things. Because of that, we are afraid. We say that, well, there must be an engagement. There must be an ethical engagement. I think it's the most important thing from the university, the aspect, the ethical aspect, which is very important to respect these engagements and to apply it well. Not to say, well, I'm in UK, I have my regulations, I'm outside UK, I do what I like, I'm in France, I respect the regulations, outside I can do what I like. You see, this is what we are looking to see, how we can regulate. Thank you.
Other questions? Maybe we must have a coffee break.
Yes.
It's not time. We'll continue the discussion during the coffee break because we took time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Do you want